There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, State Representative Chip Brown filling in today for Sean Sullivan. Well, thank you for being with us. Remember, our text line is open at 251-343-0106. I'm joining the line right now with State Representative Shane Stringer from North Mobile County. Shane, welcome aboard.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chip. Appreciate you.
Wanted to bring you on today and maybe talk about a little bit about the Second Amendment. I know that that's something that's important to you. Over the years, you've passed some important gun legislation, constitutional carry, and other legislation, and kind of look forward on, you know, the upcoming session in February and what we might expect, and maybe look at some of the challenges that that we're facing right now.
Yeah, I've really jumped right into it back in 2018. You know, once I won my seat and got in there and, you know, just started addressing some of the important issues to me and my constituents. And, of course, you know, I cover North Mobile and North Baldwin County, and very strong conservative group of people. And, you know, one of the first things that came to my attention was the Constitution carry language and bill. And I had several constituents ask, you know, what my thoughts were and what I would consider doing with that. So, you know, at that time, I really did not have a adequate knowledge on the bill. So I started doing some research and reaching out to sheriffs across the country where they had this already in place. And, you know, talking to them, just trying to get my head wrapped around it. And, you know, I was really shocked and surprised, man. Almost all the sheriffs and elected officials in the other states where this was at, you know, I would tell them what I was doing and, you know, my reasoning for researching. And, you know, several of them, you know, right off the bat, they were like, Representative Stringer, what do your people want? What are they looking for? You know, and I told them that our polling had showed 70%+ every time wanted Constitution carry. And these sheriffs, they were like, well, you are represented to represent the people, your constituents. You should be doing that. And I was like, you know, very shocked to hear that from some of them. But, you know, that's exactly what I did. I dug in, started working on this. And, you know, we worked on it for, I guess, 2 or 3 years there until we finally got it to where it needed to be and we were able to get it passed. And it's turned out to be a very important piece of legislation, especially right here in Mobile where we've seen crime. Gun crime has dropped, you know, since the bill has passed.
Well, that's right. And you know, working with you on that legislation, it, you know, you had a lot of hurdles thrown up in your face and it was very tough to get that through. You know, it's not always easy to try to get legislation of that magnitude through. And but, you know, it, from a constitutional standpoint, I think it's very, you know, very solid ground with that. I mean, you know, people have a right to bear arms. They have a right to defend themselves.
That's correct, you know, and that was one of the things I was constantly telling people that was opposing the legislation. You know, one, it is the Constitution, and we are to adhere to the Constitution. And, you know, and then I would hear, well, I don't think that people know what's best for them, you know, or the government knows better, or we know better. And I don't believe that. You know, I think the people know better, and I think, you know, and if the people make mistakes, then that's on them, but we are still elected to represent them. But, yeah, it was quite a few hurdles trying to get that passed. And, meeting some of the resistance, you know, we did. But, you know, one thing that was very unique to me in the middle of doing this and in getting through this is watching what was going on in Ukraine, another country, you know, that had strong laws against gun ownership and extremely tough to even get guns or permitting in those in that country. But soon as Russia started invading them, immediately the federal government starts trying to pass out, you know, AR-style weapons. And, you know, it's just very watching the news and watching these stories. And these people look like they were picking up an alien. They didn't have a clue what they were picking up or what they were doing. And, you know, did not know how to operate these weapons, and especially in safe manners. And, you know, and we found out quick, fast, and in a hurry that that's not the time to do that. So, you know, I applaud the United States and the representatives that stand up for our Second Amendment and First Amendment and for the Constitution in general for what they do to defend our people and make sure we're prepared.
Well, and that's right. You know, you look at even what we saw in Israel back in October, you know, when they had made it where at those kibbutzes, the farms, that individuals weren't carrying weapons. And that used to be a staple of Israeli society, but at that time they weren't. And so they were sitting ducks. You know, they didn't have an ability to defend themselves. So that ties right in with what you're saying in Ukraine. And, you know, if you look forward and you look at the state issues versus the federal issues, oftentimes it's tough, you know, dealing with ATF and others that want to come down and be tough on the states and do things that aren't necessarily on the up and up, like, you know, on dealing with braces and other devices on weapons that can lead to many other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, I think our federal partners get misled sometimes, you know, and in some of this. But also, you know, I know some of the federal agents that I've worked with over the years. You know, I've been in law enforcement for 33 years, and some of them believe and think just like I do. But, you know, the fact is we have got to defend the Constitution, stay on that. We are so quick to try to inject our personal opinions in. Okay, well, I'm okay with the Second Amendment, but I don't think they should have a magazine that can carry 10. I don't think that they should have a extended stock or a short barrel or whatever. And it just, you know, we can get into our personal opinions on all of the accessories and parts of these guns, but I don't think that plays a part. You know, the fact is the Second Amendment is a individual right. It's not a group right. You know, we're not out here snatching everybody's Second Amendment rights because we got a group of thugs in Mobile or Pritchard or Birmingham or Montgomery that's out doing wrong. You know, what we do is we try to address that group and we try to, you know, take their gun rights when they violate the law and deal with them. And, you know, that's one of the things. I guess it can be easier to address in a hole to just come in and take everybody's guns or attempt to, but that is not the solution. The solution is let's address the bad actors and the ones that are creating chaos in our communities.
Well, I agree with you 100%. If you look, it's a societal problem. It's a mental health problem. And, you know, as a state, as a nation, we've got to focus more on mental health. I mean, we have so many gun control laws on the books on the federal side that, you know, we're just putting restrictions and laws on top of laws that we're not actually enforcing. And it's a mental health issue. If you go back and you look at majority of shootings, it's an issue that, you know, we've got to do a better job as a society looking at the core reasons for gun violence and for violence in general. And, you know, I think as a state, that is one thing I applaud Speaker of the House Nathaniel Ledbetter is he's focused on mental health. And, you know, we passed legislation this last year that I carried, actually, that in the House that would focus on veterans' mental health. And for the first time as a state, we're creating a task force. Our first meeting is on August 29th in Montgomery to try to develop a roadmap, a test for what type of care veterans really need. I mean, I think we have to focus on veterans treating veterans, you know, and I know you've been very involved with that as well, Representative Stringer, on representing your district. You have a lot of veterans there, and on your vice chairman of Homeland Security in the House. And, you know, some of those issues that your committee's taken up, like rioting and those sorts of things. I mean, what do you see coming up in the next session dealing with some of those issues that might be important coming through that committee?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I want to say I appreciate all your work you've done in the veterans and dealing with that, because that is extremely important. You know, our session, our class in the House, we've tried to pass a lot of pro legislation to help our veterans in dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. And we've even looked at it and trying to get something in place for our first responders. So hopefully, you know, we can continue to do some good work there. But, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of legislation coming attacking our Second Amendments. I think you're going to see, you know, we've already seen a pre-filed bill and some press briefings and releases put out trying to put permitting in place for AR-style weapons and rifles, and that's absolutely not going to fly in my court. I'll continue to fight against that. I think we're going to continue to see probably for now some different one's attempt to make changes to the Constitution carry bill, and I'll completely fight against that, and I know you will too. We've put too much work into it to not, you know, keep it the way it is. It's a good bill, and it's working well for our state, and you know, I really don't even think it's hurt the sheriff's permitting. I don't think that's took too big of a hit just yet. So, but we'll continue to look after our first responders and do what we can do for them. And you know, I'm Public Safety, Homeland Security, we always have a lot of very interesting bills, and of course a lot of that it's very important to our Second Amendment and our, of course, our dealing with our military and veteran affairs.
Well, and I know one of the most important issues up in your area in North Mobile County in particular is Highway 45. That's continuously been put on the back burner for years, administration after administration. And, you know, I think as a community, we have to try to put that in the forefront. And I mean, that's just it's just not a safe roadway. And really, as a state, we need to, it's somewhat of an embarrassment. I mean, it's four laned all the way down till you get to the state line, and then it's not. I know you've worked tirelessly on that. And can you tell me a little bit about that?
That's been one of my main priorities since I've got in the legislature. And, you know, I had some talks with the Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth last session before, and he's committed to helping us and trying to address that, seeing what we can get done. Throughout these efforts, ALDOT has came in and did, like, the scoring in the middle of the road, which, you know, I do believe has helped. In creating a situation to prevent the head-on collisions. But I also am a firm believer you've just got too much traffic on the road, and until we get some asphalt on the ground, we're going to continue to have problems. But as you said, I mean, the road is four-laned from Mississippi, you know, I think all the way to Chicago. So it's time that we step up and address that. It is a hurricane evacuation route with all the industry that we have in Mobile County with Airbus, Austal, Amazon Shipping Center, Walmart Shipping Center, the steel mills in the north part of the county, the aluminum plant over in Baymanette. I mean, we have got so much industry that has came, and I think it was David Preston that maybe said something about the infrastructure. We are going to definitely have to address our infrastructure.
Yeah, that's right. Those growing pains, that's part of it, is if you bring in industry, you have to they create jobs, and then in turn you have to keep up with it, the infrastructure side on the roads and bridges. And you know, we on that particular section, it's just over the years there hadn't been enough focus on it. So I applaud you on that, because I actually travel that road quite frequently going back and forth to Mississippi, and it's dangerous. You know, you see many of the tags you see are Missouri tags, Ohio, Illinois, all coming in. And when you get to Mississippi, it is like the Golden Gates open up, and it's four-laned all the way through. It's beautiful. But then when you get to Alabama, it's a log jam, you know, backed up, and people try to pass, and I've seen numerous wrecks over the years, often very deadly. So something has to be done on it, and I know that's an effort that you've worked on, you know, tirelessly over the last 6 years.
Yeah, and Sean Sullivan and Jeff Poor have always made this a priority, and, you know, I don't think I've ever came on either one of their shows where they didn't bring this up and talk about it. You know, it's that important. But, you know, I've had legislators from all over the state that come up to me throughout the session that will, you know, that will tell me that I've came through there, and you're exactly right. This is a dangerous road. I witnessed, you know, a dozen near misses. So, you know, people are seeing how important it is and the changes that are needed. So, you know, I appreciate your help and all the other legislators and Governor Ainsworth. We'll continue to fight until we get something done.
All right. The what other bills do you have coming up this session? Any that you want to talk about?
Well, you know, I've got a couple I'm looking at. I've got, you know, one issue that we've dealt with. You know, right now the Marine Police does not have to have probable cause to board a vessel if you're out in your boat somewhere. And you've got a big boat district yourself. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing is they're using a Coast Guard rule that allows them to come on and do a safety inspection to gain access to your boat. And then once they're in your boat, then they can search, do whatever they want. And I just don't, as a law enforcement officer, I just don't think that that's proper. You know, I think that there needs to be probable cause for them to board your boat, just like as a law enforcement officer, I would need probable cause to search your car or enter your car. So I'm looking at some legislation to try to address that, not trying to hurt our Marine Police by no means, and appreciate what they're out doing every day. But, you know, I know it's a shortcut for them to circumvent probable cause, but I just personally do not think that that's the proper way to do it, that we need to fix that in the legislature.
Well, I agree with you on that. My district in particular has probably more coastline than anyone else in the legislature. Starts at Dog River, runs all the way to Mississippi, and then includes Dog River, Fowl River, Mobile Bay, Mississippi Sound, and part of the Gulf of Mexico. And I get a lot of complaints about that. You know, if you're not going to get pulled over driving a car just for no particular reason, there needs to be probable cause. And I agree with you on that. I mean, it should be probable cause of them. There's some particular issue of why they pulled you over, and not just looking for the opportunity to pull you over and find an opportunity to cite you. So we need to look at that. And I applaud you for stepping up and taking a look at it.
Well, I appreciate it. I've met with Aaliyah and the Marine Division and trying to work out something and kind of make sure that they're aware and see if we could get it addressed, you know, addressed some other way. But it may take some legislation to get it under control.
Well, thank you. That was Representative Shane Stringer, North Mobile. Thank you, Shane. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, this is Chip Brown filling in for Sean Sullivan today. We just had Representative Shane Stringer on with us talking about the Second Amendment. Remember, our text line's open at 251-343-0106. I think we've got time to take one of those texts, Dalton.
We had Bill text in. We need the traffic laws enforced on Highway 45. It's like the Wild West.
Well, I would agree with you, Bill. We've got to enforce those traffic laws, but we also have to look at at widening that and extending it to connect to the four lanes in Mississippi. That's where it gets dangerous to me, is that people pass, particularly that aren't from this area. And, you know, that area up around Citronelle is so hilly, and they can't see over it, and they get frustrated that they're number 15 in line, and they want to get around that log truck, and they dare to risk it, and then they have head-on collisions or end off in a ditch somewhere. So
that's speed on the road. Another texter said, we also need a speed limit of 8 knots in Perdita Pass, starting at the bridge to the last marker. Too many quad motorboats doing 50 to 65 knots have made it in safe.
Well, I tell you what, I would encourage him to reach out to the Alabama Marine Police and ask them, that they're the ones that you have to go through to get no wake zones. We're struggling with that a little bit in my district. We put in a boat ramp on part of Fowl River that wasn't used to having heavy boat traffic, and so we've gone through the Alabama Marine Police, and that's who you have to go through to deal with that.
Got some more text. You want me to read it to you after the break?
Yeah, we'll take it up after the break.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Chip Brown with you this afternoon, filling in for the legend, Sean Sullivan. We're sitting here taking some text today. Our text line, 251-343-0106. My text man Dalton is with me.
Text czar, maybe?
The text guru, the text doctor.
Don't call me text czar, because then everyone will get upset about that. Jerry in Fort Morgan says, the fact that the left has declared war on the right of free men to defend themselves should be an inspiration for the elected representatives to pass legislation on the state level to protect the right of citizens.
Well, you know, we try to do that. I think if we look at, as a state, I mean, Alabama, you know, the right of free citizens as far as free speech, the right of free citizens, the ability to defend themselves through the Second Amendment, those are things that are important. I mean, we look at other legislation. Last year, I carried a bill that passed, that the governor signed, that dealt with genetic privacy. You know, you sell your DNA to 23andMe and to Ancestry.com, and you don't know what happens with that. Oftentimes, it's actually sold to things like the insurance industry, where they run programs on particular areas, and they look for markers for types of cancers and those sorts of things, and that can impact your policy. And then also, heck, they could sell it to foreign governments. I mean, you don't know. And if you follow the news, Ancestry.com was just sold to BlackRock, who is shady. If there is a shady industry other than anything that's involved with George Soros, it's BlackRock. I mean, BlackRock has their hands in every single aspect of not just American life, but life around the globe. And so what I did was I had a piece of legislation that it just simply said that when you submit your DNA to any type of service, that they have to notify you and inform you what they're doing with your DNA, and notify you if your DNA is potentially going to be sold, or you have to agree to it. So that way that you're protecting your privacy, you're protecting your rights as an individual. You know, on another front, I have legislation that I carried last year that I'll be carrying again this year that deals with parental consent for vaccinations. You know, we saw during COVID that there were schools there, and one comes to mind, particularly in North Alabama, that had intended to do a mass vaccination of their students, and parents got wind of it and they were able to stop it. But in Alabama, the age of consent for on the medical side is 14. That was a law that was passed in 1973, I'm sure, to deal with Roe versus Wade. It was probably something that was rushed through, and we've been saddled with that ever since. And most people don't even realize that the medical age of consent is 14. So technically, in Alabama, if you're 14 years old, even though you can't drive, you can't drink a beer, you can't vote, you can't really do anything, you can't go see an R-rated movie, you could go in and decide that you want to have a particular operation, and technically you could do it. Now, a hospital's not going to do it because they'd get sued. Their liability is so high. But so I have legislation that says that children need their parents' consent to receive any type of vaccination. And that's the way it should be, because children are not the property of the state. They're not the responsibility of the state. They're not the responsibility of some bureaucrat sitting in a office building in Montgomery. They're not the responsibility of anyone but the parents or their legal guardians. And so that's who needs to make those informed decisions. And so as a state, I believe that's the way that the Alabama legislature is going. It's going towards, you know, more personal freedoms and more individual rights.
Do you find it's difficult the further away we get from the pandemic to keep people energized and trying to go after things that should have been, you know, fixed earlier or should have been right before we went through? I think it was such a dark period of time. A lot of people just want to turn the page. They're not thinking of the 2040 pandemic or maybe sooner than that.
Well, that's right. You know, it almost on cue, you're seeing the World Health Organization say that we have an emergency for monkeypox. You know, monkeypox is going to wipe all of us out, and they want us to wear masks again, and they want us to go back and do these foolish things that, you know, we're gonna be locked down, and we're gonna keep Walmart open, but we're gonna close those mom and pop businesses. You know, you can fly on a plane, but you have to wear a mask until you eat something on the plane, and then you can take the mask off. That miraculously, people aren't going to get sick in those few minutes. You know, it's absurd, but it is true that, you know, so much of that was used for political opportunity and political gain. You saw it with the mail, you know, the vote by mail efforts, the drop boxes, and you're seeing it again. This morning, I saw a video that Harris had a mask on. Her husband had a mask on. She kissed him with the mask. All of her staff had masks on as they boarded.
Through masks?
They had masks on, and they bumped masks, I guess. And, you know, it's just, it's absurd. It's a way to control people. Masks don't work. They're foolish. You know, I had legislation last year, actually, too, that parents could remove, if there was a mask mandate, that parents could tell their that their children could opt out. All they had to do was sign a form and send it into school. And things like that, it protects individual rights, because if I'm a parent and I want my child to wear a mask, the child can wear a mask. It doesn't say you can't wear a mask. It just says that those children, if the parents don't want them to wear a mask, then they shouldn't have to wear a mask. And I believe that as an individual, too, you know, I won't wear a mask. I think that as an individual, I should have the right to make my own decisions and stand tall on my own 2 feet.
Yeah, I almost feel silly. Maybe not silly, but at the time, early 2020, you're thinking, hey, I'll put the mask on. It's not that big a deal. But then, if you remember, there was a moment there where a lot of us were saying, hey, you know, if it makes other people feel good, I'll do it. But then it just, the avalanche kept coming, and they kept saying, if you don't, you're a horrible person. What are you trying to kill, grandma? But at the early moments of that, I think there were a lot of well-intentioned people who said, hey, I don't think these masks are doing much, but if it makes you feel better, I'll do it. And I think they really took that and kind of beat us over the head with it.
Oh, you're right. I mean, early on, you know, even in the legislature, we had to wear a mask if we wanted to walk out on the floor and those sorts of things. And so you had to do it. And that was one, we were in uncharted waters. You know, now we know better. We've got hindsight to look back on that. And, you know, studies have shown that actually more people, when we had the Spanish flu following World War I, that more people actually died from wearing masks because it caused pneumonia, and people died from pneumonia. You know, it makes sense that if small particles can get through a mask, and even on the, you know, on the, not the World Health, the CDC websites, at the early stages of COVID, if you remember, Fauci was saying, nah, you don't wear a mask, you don't have to wear a mask. And it was actually on their website that saying it's not effective. And then for political purposes, I think it's a way of controlling people that you have to do this, and they wiped all that out, and all of a sudden it became a tool to supposedly try to keep people safe.
We always get a lot of 45 texts whenever Highway 45 comes up. David says, even though the entire stretch of 45 needs to be four lane, if they would focus on the stretch from 158 to Citronelle, that would take care of the vast majority of the problems. So another take on 45 there.
Well, that's probably right. I would think they would start on that section that is closest to Mississippi and work back. To me, that would make the most sense. And something has to be done, and I know people are working hard on trying to find a solution for that.
Another texter, Shane Stringer, is right about Aaliyah boarding and harassing boaters. I've had an officer board my vessel and made me throw back six white trout, which have no limit, saying they were speckled trout with no spots. I get the safety checks, but if they're going to try to enforce conservation laws, they need to learn their fish, is what this texter says.
Yeah, there's no limit on white trout. You should have been able to keep all those. That's one of my favorite fish on the Hollinger's Island Reef out there. I'm giving my secrets away here, dog. But they're abundant. There's a reason there's no limit on them. And I agree. I know that Representative Stringer is working on that legislation, and we both get calls on that, and we'll be working on that together.
Here's more legislation. I'm glad Chris brought this up. Chris in Orange Beach. I was telling you, unprompted, before the show about my family's history with hearing aids. We all like to do things that ruins our hearing. So the hearing aid tax bill. And Chris said, I'm about to spend $400 on taxes for hearing aid. Please tell me if this new bill Governor Ivey signed into law goes into effect October 1st and save me $400, please. But I believe that's by municipality, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's the state portion of it, but the municipalities can make up their own decisions on that. And I know that was Representative Margie Wilcox from House District 104. That was her legislation. And she is working overtime to try to remedy that situation. I was in a meeting with her the other night, and we both spoke, and that was one of the biggest points that she made, was that she's trying to work with these mayors, particularly locally, to try to get a voice to try to change that legislation, that the cities will follow the state and do away with the tax.
Yeah, she needs to say it loudly or have closed captioning for
her. Right.
Most folks who it matters for to know what's going on. Want to get to some more texts when we get back here?
Yeah, that sounds good.
251-343-0106, last segment here of Midday Mobile with Representative Chip Brown.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we're back. This is Chip Brown filling in for Sean Sullivan. We're spending the afternoon taking a few texts here and talking about different legislation. Of course, presidential election coming up November 5th. It's just an interesting time to be alive.
And I know legislation that a lot of people always bring up on the text line whenever we talk about it, or especially now that you're on, these seafood bills, and especially the country of origin bill from this last session, that passed. Where do we stand on that? And do you have other similar items kind of in the works?
Yeah, that was House Bill 66 in this last legislative session, and that came out of the committee that I chair in the legislature. That's the Committee on Ports and Waterways. And what that does is it says that if you go to a restaurant or a deli, a market, that they have to tell you the country of origin. They have to tell you if it's imported or if it's domestic or if it's wild caught or if it's farm raised. And that comes out of things like my own experience. I went to a local place, back about a year ago, and I asked the waitress, what was the fresh catch of the day? And she said, sway. And, I said, well, where's that from? And she said, I think it's from the Gulf of Mexico. And of course it's not, because what that is, it's Vietnamese catfish that's raised along the Mekong Delta. And if you ever see videos of how they raise that in the ditches, you won't want to eat sway. Mm. And, it's, by doing that, too, it does two things, really. you know, our seafood industry in the state of Alabama and really nationally is under siege. The federal government goes around the world and they spend, you know, billions of dollars through USAID and through the World Bank, and they modernize seafood industries in countries like India, Ecuador, Liberia, all these emerging countries and economies. And then we help them build up their commercial seafood industry, and then their governments subsidize them. And then in turn, they flood the U.S. market with imports, and we either don't charge any tariff or we charge very low tariffs. So what we have a problem right now with Ecuador, where we haven't had any tariff on Ecuador. We helped them modernize their seafood industry, and then we allowed them to flood the market here in the United States. And not only do they flood the market, they buy up all the cold storage so that when we finally do impose a tariff on Ecuador, they have shrimp that's already pre-positioned to take advantage of that, you know. And so you get those situations, and it really hurts our commercial seafood industry that they have to pay for fuel, they have to pay for, you know, labor costs, they have to pay for insurance, they have to pay for equipment. I mean, we've done a few things as a state. I had a bill, I believe it was 2 years ago, that for the first time it treats commercial seafood as agriculture. And because they are farmers, they farm the sea, you know. And but in the past, they weren't able to take advantage of the same tax breaks that our farmers get. And so for the first time, with the passage of that bill that was signed by Governor Ivey 2 years ago, now our commercial seafood doesn't pay taxes on nets and, you know, line or those sorts of things. And then they pay the lowest ad valorem tax on boats that puts them in line with agriculture buying equipment like tractors and that sorts of things. So we, as a state, we have to do what we can twofold. One, to combat the federal government, to get creative and look at things like that can help out the commercial seafood industry. But then at the same time, we also look at legislation like that lets you know where your seafood is coming from, and it's a health issue. The public has a right to be informed. They need to know where their food is coming from. And so this legislation will do that. It'll allow the people to know where their seafood is coming from. And then this year I have House Bill 1, actually was the first bill filed.
Nice.
That is the second part of that legislation that I passed last year that will go into effect this fall. And what it does is it creates a fund that's paid for by seafood wholesalers, that when they sell seafood that's imported, they pay a fee, a licensing fee every year that goes along just as a, you know, on part of the license that they already get from the state of Alabama to be able to be in business. And what that money goes to is we'll go to the health Department of Public Health, to have inspectors to inspect the seafood that comes into the state of Alabama. Because, you know, on the domestic side, we have chain of custody. We know where that seafood came from, who touched it, what truck it was on, you know, who handled it, where it was this day, that day. So when it hits your table, you can feel confident that if it was caught in the state of Alabama, we know where it came from. But if it's imported from, you know, India, anywhere around the globe, we don't know who touched that. Was it laying in the hull of a ship that didn't have refrigeration and it's tainted? We don't know. And so by doing this, it's a better effort to keep the people safe.
And that ties in so nicely to what you were discussing, I think, in the first hour about our agriculture in this state and the products we make, the products that come from our soil that we send off and then buy retail after it's, you know, put together by whatever country using sometimes slave labor, sometimes just cheap, awful working conditions. Kind of the same thing with our seafood industry there.
That's right. You know, unfortunately, you have situations where international boats will catch seafood in U.S. waters, and it's still cheaper for them, though, to send it back to, say, Thailand, have it packaged, and then sent back to the United States because our fuel costs, labor costs, everything are so high right now with this economy that, you know, we have boats just sitting at the docks. That I was in Balabatri a few days ago, and there were definitely more boats at the docks than there were out. And so we have to rectify that. We have to. I said earlier I was in Washington. I was in Washington about 3 weeks ago, and I went by Senator Britt's office and Senator Tuberville's office and sat down, and we had discussions about this. And, you know, those first 100 days of a Trump administration, that's one of the things that gets focused on is looking at tariffs, looking at their commerce rules. And so we need to be on board. We need to be ready.
Very good. You got anything else to say to the people?
No, get out there and vote November 5th, and you know, I'm proud to be your state representative in House District 105 and serve the people of the state of Alabama. God bless you, and have a great week.